We were not on that top tier. We fancied ourselves so, but not necessarily. And you got to remember, this is at a time when, mass production meant bicycles. And we've finally crossed a line into stepping up to the world plate with an orator as our president. And we were seeing all these big things happening and wanted to be at that level and pushing ourselves toward it. But if you think about it, then, as the war comes along, we're deeply divided. America, I mean, I think if I recall correctly, Nebraska was had the most German language schools. And remember, the reason there were so many German language schools is because they didn't want the kids in the regular public schools. But of course, public schools were only a more or less recent concept. So, there are all these little things coming together, and we have this belief in ourselves, but at the same time, we're not there yet. But the crucible of war changes everything. We had embraced progressivism, but war kills any reform.
You talked a lot about in one of your presentations, history presentations, about the social upheaval post-war.
Absolutely. Think of all the changes that made. Here were people that had never gotten 20 miles away from home because, again, cars and bicycles, I mean, cars are just coming in. These people had never been away from home. They had never been to a big city. And we're also right at that point in 1919, 1920, where there's almost this huge flip is going to happen where there will be more people living in cities than there are in rural areas. That had never been true before. Think about the difference that makes. And a lot of that is people leaving those rural areas to go to the big cities. Those dens of iniquity. Oh my goodness, what are we thinking? What's going on here? And imagine the people they leave behind. So the social upheaval, 1919, really in my mind ranks above 1968 as a year of social upheaval. And possibly as far as within our country, I think it's up there with the American Revolution as far as a time of change in how we think and how we perceive things.
Certainly how everything looked changed a great deal, 1919. By then, the way women dressed, the way that people advertised, the way that we enjoyed music.
Well, and think of this medium we're talking on right now. Radio is just coming in. And that suddenly is saying, we can reach you where you live now, not tomorrow, not down the road sometime, now, live, really, at this moment. This is huge. This is amazing. And people, I mean, this room we're sitting in would, this desk would be the size of one of the receivers you'd have to have. But my gosh, what a change that makes. And suddenly think of those people listening to that radio and realizing there's a world out there. There's a world I can reach out there. And you have that entire group. Think about the Lost Generation, all these people from Iowa that we know, their names that we know, who go on to go to the big cities. Schreyer, Hoover, all of these people from our region. Hopkins is going to be coming along around this time.
Harry Hopkins.
Harry Hopkins, all of these people, they're heading to the city to make a difference. And they do make a difference. And they make a huge difference. And yet, what inspired them? Well, what inspired them to leave might not be the same thing that they were heading for. It might be what they were trying to get away from. And think of the literature that we still live with today. The people again who left, Fitzgerald and Hemingway and all these names we know coming to the fore. And even if it's lighter fiction, whether it's Agatha Christie and people who were influenced during this time, J.R.R. Tolkien, yeah. So, all of these people who today are household names to us, You know, they were just people trying to figure out, where am I going? Where am I going to be? I want to be where things are happening. So
they saw an opportunity, but there are also some sort of darker forces out there that had big opportunities.
Yep, absolutely. And of course, during the same time frame, you know, you had the situation of the Great Migration as the blacks were leaving the South. But what we never talk about is that in many cases, they were encouraged to leave the South in what, you know, cities or an entire county would work to intimidate and force them out. We don't want them out. You know, it's a dark era. And of course, when they get to the cities, it's not necessarily that they're welcome there. And you're going to see the first of the race riots in the big city. And of course, things we get turned around today, those race riots are not started by the blacks that come there. They're started by the people who attack them for coming there. And, you know, 1918, 1919, the rebirth and growth of the KKK. You know, which was there to, originally they had been there to intimidate and stop blacks from gaining equality in the South. Well, they've expanded. Now they want to stop Catholics and Jews and blacks from gaining, because of course, those are the minorities at this point. Those are the ones they want to get rid of. And through all of this, as these ethnic issues are coming to the fore, that's when suddenly we have a president that comes along and says it's time to return to normalcy. Well, what is a normalcy? It's not a real word. Normalcy. There we go. Whatever it is, we'll pronounce it and make up what it means afterwards. And they will do that. And out of that growth comes the first true legislation to restrict who can come to America. Didn't exist before that. You know, people tell you, well, my great-grandparents came here legally. Yeah, they got on a boat and they stepped off the boat at Ellis Island, gave them their name and went on. Because before Ellis Island, you didn't even have to do that. And there were two other well-known places that you could have stopped instead. But that's what it meant to come to America. You know, so we see cycles in American history.